From Noble Robot on East Hennepin Avenue in constrained Minneapolis, this is Nice Games Club, the show where nice game devs talk games and game development. I'm Ellen Burns-Johnson, and I make nice games.
I'm Steve McGregor, and I make nice games.
And I'm Mark LaCroix, I too make nice games.
In this episode, we talk with indie developer and creator of Chipmunk 2D, Scott Lemke, to discuss Physics 101. That's my level. And so, if everyone's ready, let's...
Welcome.
Welcome.
Hello.
Welcome.
He's waiting for the cue, everybody.
Yeah.
We warned him about how we do the intros. You know, sometimes it's a little awkward. And I could see the glint in his eye. He was going to make us pay for that.
It's wild that we haven't had you on the show yet, because you've been around in the community for forever. As long as I don't. You've done so much for the community. So we appreciate you being on the show here today.
Yeah, sure. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
I feel like, yeah, when I sort of joined this Motley Crue back when, I felt like you'd been around already a while.
Yeah, because like the local IGDA chapter had kind of started up again in 2007, which was right around the time that my business partner and I graduated from college. And
yeah.
Like a month later that summer, you know, we saw on some, you know, a posting for an event, and we thought, oh, that'd be fun. We should go to that. Uh-huh. And yeah, so we've kind of been going ever since. And I think I've probably missed like 10 or 20 of them in 15 years or however long that is now.
Dang, that's impressive.
That's not very many.
That's what we call a pillar of the community, everybody.
Yes, yes.
For people who are listening but are not in the Twin Cities game dev community, can we get a little intro from Scott and maybe a little extra intro from people who might be more willing to like be like, no, really, it's awesome. Sometimes people don't like to toot their own horns on the podcast, but this is the time for it.
Okay, well, yeah, so I guess I've been doing games since like the late 90s, making, you know, just like simple little stuff for myself. I think the first times I actually like shared them on the internet and other people played them and liked them was early 2000s, like when I was in college. And that was actually around the time when I made my first physics engine, which,
wow,
if you believe it or not, was called Squirrel Physics. Not joking. I looked out a window and I saw a squirrel and I was like, sure, that's a name. We'll just go with that.
Cool.
And yeah, so I had a bunch of people that used that back in the day. And it was a much simpler sort of physics engine. And yeah, then for my like senior project for college, I wanted to do a fancier physics engine, and so I started looking into how to do rigid body physics stuff, and that's where Chipmunk came from. I just decided to, you know, stick with the rodent theme because why not? That's
yeah,
it's very Twin Cities as well, like
I guess, sure, gophers.
Yeah,
okay,
there's some lineage to it. When I heard the name of it, I'm like, of course.
It's true.
But no, that's interesting. I didn't know it was a college project that started that there.
Yep.
That's interesting. I mean, I suppose something as ambitious as that, like there needs to be a reason for it existing. And I was going to ask what the reason was. And it sounds like you kind of just had some time on your hands in an environment where that time could be put to good use.
Kind of. I mean, it was mostly done before it was the senior project.
Yeah.
It was just that was the time to like put it all together and write a paper about how it worked. And yeah, because I'd already wanted to make physics engines for games because at the time, at least, there wasn't really any stuff to do 2D physics, really.
Right, yeah. Right.
And so, yeah, I wanted to learn it and found out that, yeah, it's a much deeper rabbit hole than I thought it was initially. But
and that suited you.
Yeah, exactly. And then it was, ended up being a nice thing to, I needed a senior project, so why not, you know,
yeah,
continue working on the thing that I'd already been building.
Right.
So. Yeah. I mean, I'm kind of acting like that I'm marveled by that, but I kind of did the same thing in college too. Like I was already doing a project. I'm like, well, might as well, you know.
Man, yeah, I wish I was that ambitious. Maybe I would have graduated.
I mean, that's why I'm a double major, is because I was able to just say everything I'm doing, that's my education.
Yeah. Dang.
They let me get away with it.
No, I was just trying to get a job. That's why I wasn't very motivated. Anyways, we're here to talk about fun stuff like physics.
Uh-huh. Wait, first, Ellen asked, we have to say Scott's really great.
Yes, Scott's really great.
Right.
It's true. It's true.
Great Scott, yeah.
Right. And not just, I mean, good not job. Just Thank like you. A longtime pillar of the community, but I think also you're a person someone goes to when they want to go a little bit down that rabbit hole.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, every community needs a couple folks like that. And this community is lucky to have you to serve that function. So thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I guess let's get into it.
Yes.
Physics 101. I think we wanted to hear a little bit about how Chipmunk was made, and we'll get into that as we go, I think.
Yeah.
Because it's also still something that's available for use, right? It's been around a long time, but I think people should check it out. But I think I do want to get maybe deeper into just like what a physics engine is, because every time I toy with it in an engine or in a framework, I feel like I kind of understand it, and then I encounter something that is very unintuitive, and I have to like really dig in and be like, oh, this sort of makes sense, but it isn't at all how I thought it worked.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the approach I always have to it. And then I always forget all that stuff until the next time I need to learn it. So I guess the first question is, what is the bare minimum? What is the core pieces a physics system needs, like from nothing? What can it what can it not do without?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I guess I would say, you know, even going back to like old arcade games or, you know, Mario or something like that, you could say that, you know, had rudimentary physics there, you could run around and jump. And so like you needed the position of Mario and his velocity and maybe some, you know, gravity, so some acceleration. And then to, you know, be able to respond to the world around it and enemies, you need to be able to collide with things and have some sort of response to that collision. So like, how do they move along the ground or slide on walls if they bump into those? Yeah, so you got the basic properties of, you know, position, velocity, maybe mass. That's kind of optional, you know, mm-hmm. at the basic level that you don't really need. But yeah, then a way to figure out what's overlapping or what's colliding and how to deal with it.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I think people who are familiar with like Mario speedrunning, the first time you hear about like, oh yeah, Mario goes through walls all the time in Super Mario Brothers. And you're like, how is that possible? It's like, that's because that's how it works. That's how all these things work. Mm. And the particulars of that physics system are very to the needs of that game.
Exactly, yeah.
These days,
simple because it does exactly what it needs to.
Yep. These days, you have systems that are generalized, meant to service any kind of game you could throw at it.
Right.
But even those make choices about what's possible and what's not.
Yeah.
So maybe moving past just the velocity and collision. What turns it from a system that is just gets the job done to something that is that you could call a physics system, or is that a fuzzier definition?
I mean, I guess I would call it a bit of a fuzzy definition because we recently had at IGDA someone did a talk and they were talking about how their physics system for the Excalibur JS engine has arcade physics and realistic physics.
Yeah.
Where the arcade physics, things don't rotate and it's kind of simplified, but it's still, you know, you can stack things and push things around and do that sort of stuff. So it's kind of how far you want to take it in terms of that. But, you know, I think for a lot of people, they would definitely say that, like, if you can't stack objects, it's not a physics engine, right?
Right.
So even with that, like, simplified, like, arcade physics that he presented, I think people would still consider that a physics engine, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's vastly simpler to write something like that than, you know, full rigid body physics where the boxes tumble and fall into a pile and do the, you know, dominoes that knock each other over, that sort of stuff.
Right. Yeah. And I know, like, I guess most of my experience with respect to physics is with Unity, which is, I hope you have a rant prepared for that.
Not really. I mean, the topic came up on the Discord, the local Discord a couple of days ago, and I have a very subtle rant about that, maybe, just as someone who's already written a physics engine.
Yeah.
Yeah, my thing with Unity physics is that I was already relatively familiar with Box2D, which is a framework that is very popular in indie games going back a long way.
Mm.
And Unity physics is sort of based on.
Yeah.
And so it has a lot of the
2D stuff.
Yeah, the 2D stuff, right, which is a separate system.
Right.
And I remember feeling like when I was starting to get into it, like, oh, I actually, it was like the scene in Jurassic Park. I'm like, I know this.
Mm.
And then it turns out it was just different enough.
Oh my gosh.
You know?
Yeah.
But even that, yeah, it's like a system that was, even when Unity had to do it, they sort of were inspired by the things out there. It's not just, it's not as easy to spin it up from scratch.
Right. Well, what I was going to say though, is that like Unity has a ton of features, based off of Box2D, but I've oftentimes felt quite daunted with the amount of features that are available in Unity, and I just kind of stick with my tried and true methods of doing things. Maybe it's not the best way to do it every time, but I'm just more comfortable with it. I'm curious if I'm actually curious if there are like specific tried and true physics. Are there specific things that you should like know as a person who's about to work in physics to like to help you know what these things do?
Yeah.
It's a very broad question.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So, like, we're talking about like a bigger physics engine with, yeah, you know, realistic physics and, you know, a big fancy solver. One of the biggest things that people get caught up on is, you know, so that they can drop a box in the scene, it'll tumble downstairs and do whatever, and then they take their character and they don't know how to move it around, right? Like,
right,
they change the position of it, you know, and that doesn't really work because all the collisions are mushy.
Yeah.
So going back to, like, you know, looking at like the support forums for Chipmunk and stuff, that was, you know, something that came up all the time, is just the idea that, like, you want to be able to just move things and have the physics just work, right, and it unfortunately can't really work that way, yeah, to some extent. You have to keep things in sync, that if you move the object's position, you have to, you know, give it a velocity that makes sense too.
Right.
Oh, okay.
And so that's kind of where a lot of, you know, physics engine will be like, you shouldn't move the position of things. But if you do the move the position of things, update the velocity, but also try and move things with forces instead. But
you should, yeah, cause them to move rather than just say position X equals something.
Yeah. Right. And it's a hard thing to wrap your head around, because, like, I think if you're not really working in, like, if you're just making a game where you just move around and collect stuff,
yeah,
you just need a hitbox and you don't necessarily have to think.
Particularly in 2D games, yeah, where you really feel like you're not doing the complicated stuff. Right. You don't realize how complicated it really can be.
Yeah, yeah. So it's difficult to think of it as you're giving this ball or whatever a velocity when you're moving it around the space. But I think it is useful to make sure to think of it in that way. Or at least just acknowledge that if you're not thinking of it that way, that's why it's not working. yeah, that's good to know.
Yeah, and so it kind of, like, the corollary of that too is, like, moving things around with just forces is kind of difficult and tedious too, from a certain standpoint. And so kind of like a shortcut you can do for that is to work with the velocity of the object, but don't set the velocity of it directly either, because you kind of run into similar problems there, where, like, if something's, you know, touching a wall, right, and you push it into the wall with the velocity, then the physics has to say it completely stops, and then you say, oh, no, I overwrite that, and I want the velocity to be fully moving in the direction I told it again,
yeah,
and then the physics has to say, no, it totally stops, and it's back and forth and back and forth. So whenever you set, like, the velocity of an object like that, you also kind of want to ramp that up over time, have a little bit of an acceleration. Mm-hmm. So like in Unity, for instance, there's like the move towards function for vectors. Like, you'd want to use something like that, like over a short duration of maybe, you know, a quarter of a second or something, where you interpolate towards the velocity that you want to give something. And yeah, just in general, like, doing that and thinking in terms of velocities can get you pretty far with messing with physics stuff in a way it wasn't supposed to, but, yeah, it still is relatively stable.
Yeah.
Okay. Right. And you kind of have to give up a little bit of the ultimate control of, like, this is where I want the thing to be.
Yeah.
Because that's not actually the question you will be posing, mm-hmm, to your code base. It's going to be, this is how I want it to move, or whatever. And you just have to dial that in to where you want it to be. But where you want it to be needs to just be written down on a piece of paper, not in the code.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah. So a lot of that makes it, in a sense of, like, how things should feel, particularly if you think about, like, a character's jump arcs and stuff like that, which in 3D games and in 2D games, like, the way physics moves is there's a simulation that's provided to you, but you have control over all sorts of the dials and pulleys and levers of the world. It's not, you know, you have control not just over the things in the simulation, but the simulation itself. And so a lot of that is an art, right? We talk about that interpolation to a velocity. Some of that is, sounds like it's to prevent problems with the physics being uncertain about things, but also that's going to look differently than maybe like a cold start velocity, which might be what you want if you're thinking of in terms of animation tweens and stuff like that.
Yeah, it might make a little less snappy feeling because of that.
Yeah. So how do you, so when you think about, like, either designing a system or using a system, how much of it is you got to put on your, like, mathematics hat versus, like, put on your, like, artist's hat, and how much of that is, like, not actually switching back and forth, but turning it into one thing, even?
Gosh.
I got him, Steven. Stumped.
Yes.
Within 15 minutes, I got him.
Could you repeat the question?
Yeah, so when you're using a system, when you're designing it, but I guess principally when you're using a system, and you want a thing to feel a certain way, you kind of... there's the math of it, like, this should be here by this time, but also the resulting, like, appearance and aesthetic of movement. And how do you kind of reconcile the sort of art and science of it?
Okay. Yeah. So as someone who's written a physics engine, I usually start with like the movement of the actual objects, mm-hmm. And make those work. And if, so a lot of times like doing that, you can get very like procedural looking animations, which works for me because it lets me do things with like math and stuff. But yeah, if you wanted like a pre-existing animation that kind of matches up with things, it's a little bit harder. And something that I've done on a couple projects that kind of addresses that is the simulation doesn't have to match what you show on the screen exactly.
Ah, okay.
Sure, okay.
Like there was a little car demo that I made, you know, years ago to kind of show off exactly that same idea where the joints that hold like the wheels and the car together are kind of like squishy. And sometimes if you hit the ground real hard or something, the joint will like, you know, contract too much and it'll be off by a few pixels.
Yeah.
For, you know, a couple frames until that the physics catches back up and pushes it back into shape. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean you have to draw it that way. You can reapply those, you know, constraints that you wanted it to look like mm-hmm. when you're drawing things.
Right. Decoupling the view from the collider and all that.
Yeah, so from the simulation's point of view, maybe there's a little bit of slop in there and it kind of mushed around, but the graphics, how it looked, you know, on screen looked perfectly crisp, and the user will never be able to tell the difference.
That is really interesting. Would you describe that as like a trick or as a tenet? Like, is that something you need to be thinking about, or is it something that you pull out of your top hat from time to time?
The latter. Yeah, it's definitely something that you apply when it makes sense. Otherwise, you don't really want to be doing it all the time. It's just too much extra work.
Well, I imagine also like for bug fixing, like what you're looking on that screen will not exactly be what you coded. And so like, I guess it is what you coded, but you know what I mean?
Computer only does what you tell it to.
Yes, yes.
I mean, debug views and stuff always help with that sort of thing.
Yeah.
It's just you have to remember to turn them on when you have issues to figure out what's happening.
Right.
It is an extra layer of, you know, bugs that, like, if you wanted the physics to have some certain constraint, that you also then have to, like, make the rendering do that same constraint. So you sort of have to do things twice.
Right. I was sort of thinking of it analogous to, like, hurt boxes and hit boxes, which don't always line up with art. And that's, like, that's a tenet of that kind of system. But it sounds like it's not quite to that level of, like, that's how it all works all the time. It's more like it's a way to handle edge cases.
Yeah, and particularly, like, I think it works well with, like, you know, character or vehicle controllers and stuff. Like, the main thing on the screen that the player is going to be looking at, like, it's worth spending a little extra time, you know, making those feel really good from the control-wise, but also, you know, look nice is the center of attention.
Yeah.
Whereas everything else on the screen, you know, maybe they'll never notice, so.
Right. Yeah, just knowing that, like, you're limited by physics, but only in the sense of the physics. Like, but it doesn't have to limit everything else as well.
Yeah. Yep.
Right.
That relates to one of the questions I had. And that was basically, how does the physics engine influence the design space available to the designer or the team?
Oh.
And I think, right? Ooh, gotcha. There's another one. No, but you were already kind of talking about that, right? So, Mark, I think the sentence that you just said, like, there are certain things you can do beyond the limitations of just the physics engine that make the experience of the physics different without having to change the physics engine at all. I'm wondering now if we can't come at it from the opposite side of the coin, saying like, what are some things, maybe just examples of design decisions that are constrained by physics, at least ones that you've experienced, like where you've just kind of been like, I want to try this, but the physics just won't let me.
I don't necessarily know if I have like a good example for that exactly, but physics and platformers, for instance, like when people try to use rigid body physics and platformers, I feel like that often comes up as a thing. And for a long time, it was, you know, something where people would just say that, like, you shouldn't use a physics engine if you want to make a platformer because it just won't feel right. Which is a sentiment that I don't necessarily disagree with. You know, a lot of people would, you know, come to the forums for support and be asking like, oh, well, how, you know, I'm trying to make, you know, a Mario clone, but, you know, like, how do I make it exactly the way that I want with the physics? And the physics does what it wants. And the answer is, well, maybe you don't want a full-fledged physics engine.
Yeah.
You want something simpler instead.
Yeah.
Because it just, it does affect like the way that certain things interact, that sure, you can now interact with a big old pile of boxes and knock them over and they'll tumble around, but it does, you always have to give up a little bit of control to the physics, because you're because you can't just set positions of things exactly. You kind of have to think about the motion of them as a whole.
Yeah. When we worked on Widget Satchel, I remember that we had a lot of struggles with the physics engine in particular.
Part of it was, I mean, for me in particular, it was me learning the system. It was the first time I used Unity Physics.
Because I remember I did the first pass of the jump because we did it during the game jam, but mm-hmm. you took over that. Yeah.
Well, but I mean, it was back to you ultimately because the system in Widget Satchel, your character is heavier the more widgets you collect.
Yeah.
Coins, basically.
Yeah.
And so that required us to have multiple different jumps.
Right.
And we had that on a curve.
Yes.
And then we eventually made it into like categories so that we could design better.
Yeah.
So we had fewer constant, like, you know, analog dials to design for. Mm-hmm. But even that required us mm-hmm. to have more control, where we had like a max jump height that was hard coded
yes.
each stage. But the physics needed to actually make sure you never reached any higher than
yeah,
that.
Yeah. We ended up working like around the physics engine in order to get it to work. Which I would not recommend, but it worked out for us okay, because we, you know, on one of the fun things about Widget Satchel is there's a bunch of physics things that you can whack around and throw over the screen and stuff.
And vitally, we made that influenced but not colliding with the player.
Yeah.
So all the junk in the game flies around when you hit it, but when you hit something, rather than it being a collision, the overlap just transfers a impulse to that sort of background physics, so that all the things would fly around. But it would never knock you off of a thing.
Yeah, that's actually an example of what you were talking about.
It's like a thing. And I was going to kind of say, like, sometimes like a hybrid thing like that works out really well, where you write kind of the physics you want for your character, and then you interact with the physics maybe a little more indirectly.
Yeah,
right. The physics the things we didn't care where they landed, we were just fully controlled by the physics system because we didn't care.
Yeah.
And it gives you a chance to, make your controls really tight and have kind of some physics as an extra effect.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily like super fluid physics where like, you can bounce, you know, the thing on the top of your character and have all this like super interaction where it kind of maybe looks a little mushy, but if you're using it as an extra effect, that's, you know, it ends up working fine, I think.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. I think that the path of least resistance when you're like, I want to make an indie platformer, and you don't have a lot of experience, which was where I was at when we started Widget Satchel, is tile systems and default physics. And those things are so contradictory, but those are the two things that are generally available to you that you can get as these packages that you can just start making a game out of. And I don't know that there's enough out there enough warning labels on those products, if that makes sense. So for Chipmunk, I mean, you like you say, support forums, you got a lot of people who fell into a lot of those traps that everybody does. But as the designer, what was the what were you hoping Chipmunk would be used for? Or did you have put a lot of thought into that?
So honestly, like my initial driving force is early 2000s, played the original Halo, and it's like, you know, I thought like, oh, the vehicles in this game were just great, because like it kind of never really seen anything like that in a game, and the way the physics for those works is surprisingly simple too.
Yeah,
but you know, I was like, I'd really like to have like this sort of stuff available to me to make a 2D game. So, you know, I wanted to be able to make, like fancy vehicles and 2D games. And I've never made a 2D game that had, other than like some like prototypes and demos and stuff like that, which scratched the itch, I guess.
But. Yeah.
I like that story because I've heard it 1,000 times. Like, I made this thing for this reason and I didn't do it. And it was great. Like,
yeah. I got too excited about, you know, the process and not the goal.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's a good place to be.
Heard.
That's cool.
I'm not sure how you had this power, but just mentioning like original Halo immediately kicked the theme in, and so I've just been jamming by myself over here for about 30 seconds to my own mental soundtrack. Thank you.
So, listeners out there who no that problem. Also happened to, you're not crazy, or you're as crazy as Ellen.
Bringing up Chipmunk, if you wanted to like start your own physics engine, where would you like begin? I guess you'd start with the base things, as you said, but like
yeah
you want to have that like familiarity with that kind of math, I would assume.
Yeah, I mean, so there are a lot of really simple places you can start. Okay. If you don't like axis aligned bounding boxes, so like has a width and a height, and it doesn't rotate, so it's always on the same axis, right?
Yeah.
That,
yeah.
So like figuring out if those overlap is really easy. You just check, you know, if like the, you know, the X axis overlaps and if the Y axis overlaps and if they both overlap, and then you figure out which one is the overlapping the least maybe. And you push them apart on that axis. You decide that's the axis that they're colliding on, the one that's the least.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, like you can kind of start out with, you know, boxes being pushed around like that, or it just like circles are also incredibly simple. And for a lot of games, really effective, like, Viridian Expanse, the game that I'm making right now, everyone's always surprised, but you know, like, so I implemented a new physics for it just, you know, to try out some new ideas. Mm-hmm. And I've only bothered to implement circles for the collision.
Right. And is that why the ship in that game is a circle?
That is exactly why the ship is a circle. Because I was just like, oh, I'll just make things easy on myself.
Yeah. So, Stephen, while Ellen is away, briefly,
yes,
I want to ask you about the feedback form.
Yeah.
And I want you to tell me, you know, now that Ellen's not here,
right.
She's not going to drudge you for what you say.
Okay.
Just tell me really what it means to you.
It means...
Be honest.
Honestly, it means a lot.
Ellen's not here. You can be honest.
I know. I'm being honest. I think it means a lot.
Yeah.
You know, I was looking at the feedback form the other day, actually.
Yeah.
And I noticed there was a new question on there that I don't think I added in there initially.
Uh-huh.
It was kind of interesting. It says, optional bonus, tell Stephen he's wrong, be specific.
Yeah.
I wonder who added that in.
Well, we got some feedback that was something that the forum needed.
Oh, okay.
To really get the proper, you know, take the temperature of the community.
Ah.
Really understand how everyone feels how wrong you are.
I represent everyone, is it? Oh, everyone feels I'm wrong. I
feel if we don't ask that, don't give people the opportunity,
yeah,
we're just not going to know how wrong you are
right.
about so many things.
Right. Okay, well, you know, I honestly kind of like that question.
Uh-huh.
Because I do like arguing, so if you want to put on random things about things I'm wrong about, and I can maybe argue against that on the show, that'd be exciting, right? You can go to nicegames.club/feedback and tell me why I'm wrong, and I'll tell you why you're wrong afterwards.
At your job, do you ever have to deal with a nose roller? How about a snub pulley? Well, if you're installing a new conveyor belt system, dealing with the different components can sound like you're speaking a foreign language. Luckily, you've got a team ready to help. Grainger's technical product specialists are fluent in maintenance, repair, and operations. So whenever you want to talk shop, just reach out. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Maybe let's get a little bit into the rabbit hole. What are like the core components, because you've mentioned a couple of them. There's, you know, you have constraints, you have solvers, you have bounding boxes. What are like what are the proper nouns of the things a physics system needs?
Well, if you're going to go for a full rigid body physics,
yes.
Rigid bodies are the sort of the idea of an object that moves but without its shape necessarily. So it's the how much does it weigh, how hard is it to cause it to rotate, which is the moment of inertia. Mm-hmm. Where is it, its position, so its velocity, its current, you know, rotation, and its, you know, angular velocity, how fast that's changing. So like you have that stuff that's all wrapped up in the rigid body. And then usually on top of that, you know, separately from that, you'd have like collision shapes.
Yeah.
You can attach to those that are various, you know, boxes and polygons and circles and, you know, line segments and pill shapes and stuff like that. Capsule shapes, I guess, is what people call them.
And so importantly, the body is independent of its volume and shape and all of that.
Yeah, because maybe that's sort of like a weird implementation detail that sort of leaked out from all the people making physics engine. But yeah, all the stuff that actually happens to the physics, it's like the shape of them and the, you know, the actual like motion is all like kind of completely separate in a lot of ways.
I can see that being beneficial because like there are a bunch of objects that don't need to move but need to have some form of collision, right? Like the ground. And so like you don't need to keep track of that, the ground's velocity.
Yeah, or kind of the other way around a lot of times too, where you have like, I don't know, imagine like a Ferris wheel in a video game or something like that, where you don't want to collide with the Ferris wheel, but you want it to exist as a thing that rotates.
Yeah.
That other things can be attached to, or you know, that might have collision shapes on them, right?
Yeah, right, yeah, right. Doesn't make sense. And then also, you abstracting those things apart would also make sense for things that have like a collider. Now, this isn't common, but a collider that can be, a polygon collider can be adjusted at runtime. But then you could have multiple bodies representing multiple portions of a thing,
right?
And you can get, you know, as complicated or as simple as you want, because like Mario is one. Well, maybe not in Mario, but like a platformer character is one body and one collider generally.
Yeah.
But that is actually a really rudimentary expression of what that is, what the representation of that thing is, which is a person with arms and legs.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so having those things abstracted out, I suppose, gets you into the headspace of this is all fake. Right?
Yeah.
I don't know. That's helped me in the past of like, these like, oh, right, this is not just, this is the physics of this character. It's like, it's comprised of these pieces and they don't always make sense together, but whatever. Now I don't need to, I can drop some of my metaphors and just deal with the system, I think. I don't know that, Stephen and Ellen, like that's been my approach. And I don't know, maybe that's not universal because every time I approach the physics system, I feel like I have to forget how physics really works to like get in the headspace of a physics system. But is that maybe not right?
I can go first because it'll be short. I don't think about physics systems. I let better devs think about that. So I'm definitely more in the intention space. Like, okay, I think from a design perspective, from the player experience perspective, I want it to feel like this. And so I will sometimes find lots of, if there's a physical aspect to an element of the gameplay that I'm talking about, I'll try to find some sort of analogy and be like, okay, I think this is, like this movement that happens here is a natural movement that we can understand intuitively. What can we do to make it feel like that in the game? And then the smart devs will figure out the rest of it. Like in Widget Satchel, I don't know, you just made stuff happen. You guys made stuff happen and I blew stuff up. Like it works. It was a good system. From a like mental perspective though, what you're talking about, Mark, absolutely makes sense because the physics engine is not physics, right? It's a representation, relatively simplistic representation of real world physics. We don't really quite understand real world physics, right? Like there's the whole idea about gravity not quite making sense. Yeah. You know, we don't know what happens inside a black hole. And
I mean, speak for yourself and also me.
Like- sure. Okay. Point. Maybe someone out there knows. Please go to the Discord and enlighten us. Yeah.
As a disclaimer, yeah. I don't model dark matter in Chipmunk.
So. Ah, okay.
Okay.
No, good.
Or relativity, for that matter.
Right.
That changes some questions I had
that
later on
extra.
In the episode.
Yeah. Maybe some of this is partly because I am an animator, or I came up as an animator.
Yeah.
And I'm also fairly, you know, geeky and I love numbers and tweaking them.
Yes.
But ultimately I do think a lot about like movement metaphors in terms of their visuals.
Yeah.
And so maybe that just makes it easier for me to like be like, oh, this is a body that has velocity, but like that's not really how it works in real life.
Right.
But that's fine.
I mean,
the more I think about it, the more disappointed I am with how it ends up.
Sure.
I think.
I mean, as somebody who is not a visual person, I mean, I don't draw. that's what I meant. I think I also approach it kind of similarly. I approach it from a design perspective where like I wanted to do this thing. I needed to move in a way. And so like I'll code it so it moves in a way. And I understand that like this isn't how it will work physically. I would want to apply a force to the thing or in order to get it to move in real life. But I don't think of forces when I'm programming a game typically.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, I kind of feel like a lot of the rudimentary, I should have more than rudimentary physics education because I was mechanical engineer in college. A lot of that experience, I feel like I don't really apply to my practice.
Yeah.
So yeah, I guess I agree with you, Mark, in that like I don't really think of like real life physics and game physics in the same way. Because like they serve separate purposes. Yeah.
And maybe the thing that the three of us all share is that at least when I think about motion, there's an intuition to it, right?
Yeah.
It's like how pool players are not that good at geometry.
Right.
Because if they applied geometry, they'd miss all their shots.
Yeah.
Right. Because there's so many more things that are just about experience and feel.
Yep.
And sometimes like maybe that's a very charitable probably understanding of my approach to movement in games. That it makes me look good. So maybe that's not it. But I think all three of us share this idea of like we just don't know enough of the actual math and the way that the systems are built enough without having to play or tweak with it.
Yeah.
So maybe that is just, maybe it's just that simple. Actually, so
it does make sense.
Taking it back to you, Scott, does our experience match with yours or to other people who have either people who've asked for support or people you've talked to? Does it make sense or does it feel like we just don't know enough? And that's what's preventing us from seeing it as feeling physics-y.
Yeah. So maybe I just start by saying the reason why they're called rigid bodies is because like the idea is like, you know, in physics, so like, oh, let's approximate everything with a sphere and, you know, like, so it's simplify everything, remove as many variables as you can. So the reason why it's a rigid body is it's an object that has, you know, properties of something that can move, but it can't flex or deform or bend or even, you know, bounce necessarily.
Yeah.
Because that would mean that would what would cause it to, you know, deform. But
yeah.
And so like even elasticity, you know, and you know, physics engine is just sort of like this number that you add to it. It's not because the object did the actual physical thing where it squished and then, you know, came back into shape.
Right, right.
It's just, you know, a number that you're adding on to. So it is a simplified model that you're kind of applying because, you know, obviously simulating individual atoms of something is never going to work. So you have to, at some point you have to be like, yeah, decide that your player is going to be a capsule shape or a box shape or something like that. And then deal with the repercussions of that simplicity when you end up with more complicated interactions.
Right. Friction is another one of those things.
Yeah.
Where it's like, oh, I'm going to make this a capsule. It's like, well, now the contact points are so small. My friction compared to how boxes slide around, I can't use the same. Reducing it by this much on the player versus on this box actually makes things a little different. Or, I mean, that maybe not be a good example, but that's the kind of thing that I think happens a lot within your own worlds. And this may just be how well you're designing your own worlds. Mm-hmm. Like the lessons you learn building parts of it don't always help you in other parts.
Yeah, I definitely turn friction off whenever I can. I feel like when respect to that, because it just gets in my way from what I want to do.
That's a hilarious metaphor.
Yeah.
It really slows you down.
Yes. That's great. Yeah, so like I definitely like try to I almost ignore a lot of like physics learnings I've had just so that I can get the stuff I want in or the stuff that the designer wants in or something. It's kind of frustrating because I recognize that like I'm not actually working with the system, I'm working against the system.
Well, we're still thinking about results based.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Tinkering,
right.
So, which is that mistake that Scott brought up right at the top.
Yeah,
and so, like, are you over there cringing? And like, that's like we're experienced developers, and like we're still thinking of it this way.
No, actually, I'm kind of thinking of specifically the friction thing. Is like over the years, like I would try to figure out like, oh, you know, what are the things that people really want to do? Like, oh, well, they still want to make platforms, even though, you know, for a while I was like, maybe you don't want to use a physics engine, you know, don't use my library sort of thing. Right.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
The pinned message on the boards was just don't.
don't bother. Yeah. But so like platformers is like a good example of like in the real world, when you walk around, it's because there's friction between your feet and the ground, and you can use that to push on things. And and then, you know, like Mario, for instance, when he wants to come to a stop, kind of does this like little bit of a skid and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Which is really nice. But then people like go and ignore the physics for that because you can't like change the friction between the ground and the player. Or can you if you write your own physics engine?
Yeah.
So like one of the features that I did, I called surface velocities, where like you can have like a shape, like a a conveyor belt where like the overall shape of it never moves, like the left and right edges don't actually change position, mm-hmm. but you can say the surface of it is moving from left to right. So when something falls on it, it causes them to scoot to the right.
Yeah.
And it's done using the normal, usual physics calculations for friction.
Yeah.
So everything works out the way you'd want it to. And then so now you have a conveyor belt that can move stuff around. Or if you do that the other way around, you can apply that to like the capsule shape for your, you know, player and say, oh, the feet, the bottom of it is moving to the left, and therefore it'll push the player to the right. Mm-hmm. So you can still use use the physics to drive some of the player interactions without completely cutting the physics engine out of the loop. And to some extent, you know, like cutting it off at its knees so it can't do its job correctly.
Yeah.
And I feel like a bunch of other engines, I've seen similar features for that now. Like, I don't think they, like, saw it from me and was like, oh, that's a good idea. But I think independently, it's you know, something like, oh, well, yeah, like, because, of, you know, the simulation is a simplification, like, how do we inject more of this real-world interaction into the simplified model where you have chunky collision shapes and stuff like that?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I like that, the further abstraction, the addition of that. I mean, I guess maybe to just support my earlier you know point, which is like the less you think about it as real physics, and the more you think about it as a system to learn, and then just learn that system, then that will, rather than thinking so much about the physics part of the physics engine, the maybe easier time you'll have getting comfortable with some of those things that don't work the way that they would work in the real world, but also lets you maybe be more creative because you know what the tools are and what levers to pull, rather than thinking about like, I want this to move faster. It's like, that's not actually what you want. You want, you know, that's the result you want, but not necessarily like, where's the move faster?
That's not how you put it in.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah. I was going to say, I feel like I learned the opposite lesson, but I'm realizing that I didn't. In that, I think that part of the reason why I'll like turn off certain aspects of it, like the friction and stuff, is because like I coded it a certain way because I just wanted it that way. And I did the thing where I just set the velocity. I'm sorry.
How could you?
And then like I get stuck on a wall and I'm like, why am I stuck on this wall? I guess I need to turn the friction off. And so it kind of cascades on itself. Uh-huh. If I understood how the system actually worked, I wouldn't have made that mistake in the first place. Or at least I would have known why that mistake was happening. And so I think that like it is very beneficial to have some rudimentary understanding of how the system works in order to avoid those kinds of those pitfalls.
And maybe a shortcut to that is just the core components that make up a system like that.
Yeah.
Like being good at math.
Yes.
So, I mean, that's sort of one of our headline questions in our outline here is like, how much math is should you really familiarize yourself to either build a system like this or really effectively use one?
Sure. I mean, I think if like your aims are simple, like you want access aligned stuff, even if, you know, like with, you know, you can get like stacking working without like too fancy of, you know, a degree in math, it was Carmack maybe that had like some quote about like all the you know, the rendering for, you know, the early games that they made was everyone, you know, thought it was like this amazing thing, but like from his standpoint is like he didn't really use any math that he didn't learn in high school.
Right.
Yeah. It was the sort of thing. It was just applying it in a new way. So like you can get pretty far like with some pretty basic math. But like, yeah, once you start getting into like the rigid body stuff where things can rotate, that's where the math starts getting really complicated.
Yeah, that's the quaternions or whatever.
Quaternions and tensor matrices.
That's from Star Trek, right?
Not quite, Ellen. I don't know what they are either, frankly, and I've been working in Unity for years.
They're four-dimensional complex numbers, sort of.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Oh. So they're even more complex.
Yeah.
Okay. I always have these like helper libraries that I write for my projects, which is like account for, you know, going past 360, just so I don't have to ever deal with quaternions.
Yeah.
And then that always like, it gets me really far. And then when it doesn't, it breaks down entirely.
Oh, no.
I'm like, oh, I should have learned quaternions. And then I never learned that lesson.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of like the reason why quaternions are used is kind of like Euler angles have a bunch of like limitations to them that quaternions don't, but they're also like, much harder to understand.
Yeah. It's that, what's it, gimbal lock or whatever? Is that what
for instance.
Yeah, yeah. That's why I learned the little bit I know about quaternions. But that's good to know that like you really don't need a huge, like, you know, college level math In order to even start working on your own physics engine, if you wanted to, that's cool.
Yeah, and actually, like, so squirrel physics, yeah, going back in time to what I started with. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was, you know, when I was a freshman in college.
Right.
I mean, I wasn't like a math genius by any. I didn't take calculus in high school, for instance. Mm. So I wasn't like super advanced in like my mathematical learnings.
Sure. Yeah.
Where I got that from is I'd stumble across a paper, I think it was Thomas Jacobson, had written an article about advanced character physics for the original PlayStation.
Oh.
So it was talking about, like, yeah, just particle physics. So not, you know, the difference between not particle physics, like, you know, particle colliders and stuff, but just the idea that you have a point that has, you know, position and a velocity, but it can't rotate. So yeah. Simplifies a bunch of stuff. That's the difference between particle and rigid body in physics system parlance. Okay. But so basically you can make characters and stuff by just taking a bunch of these particles and joining them with sticks that you know, kind of push and pull on them to make them the right length. And you just do that a few times every frame. And the math described in that paper is very much like, you know, to my high school brain, like, oh, I know how this works. It's like, the most complicated thing here was the square root, and like half of the paper was like, ah, you don't actually need the square root.
Oh, all right.
Like, you can get away without it.
Cool.
And so, like, a lot of, you know, whenever you see games that have strings and ropes or wires or whatever that dangle around, that's how those physics work. And they're just super simple. I'd definitely recommend anyone that, like, wants to try writing some physics code of their own to look that up and try it out, because it's the sort of thing you can write in, I don't know, tens of lines of code, and it's really satisfying that, like, I made that. Yeah.
Yeah. That's cool.
That's really good. I think it sounds like, and this is true of a lot of other areas in game development, it's like what people really need isn't necessarily knowledge, it's confidence.
Yeah.
Right. Like, mm-hmm. you just need to know that, like, yeah, you can do it. Like, and there is resources to find it. Maybe it's just a little bit harder because it's maybe not as, there's fewer direct leaps to that information than there is for other types of things in game development, I suppose.
Yeah. Well, I mean, also, I think developers, myself included, are impatient and don't want to look this stuff up yet.
Yeah, I guess I'm understanding that a little bit.
But I think you're right. Like,
I mean, I know that I will definitely go a long way towards deconstructing an existing system before I just decide, oh, I should have just built my own instead.
Yeah.
And I'm a person who builds systems.
Yeah.
I'm all about that. Mm-hmm. And yet I will still mm-hmm. definitely be like, oh, this, I'll just do this minus 85% of it. So that's all I need.
Yeah.
And then like a third of my code or more is just exceptions to rules. Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, to some extent, it's having someone that, you know, can tell you where to look too, right?
Yeah.
Like, to knowing that like simple type of physics stuff exists. Because, you know, I don't know, I always like to bring up the example of, you know, like, if you want to figure out the length of an arc on a circle, it's, you know, if you go all the way around, it's the diameter times pi, right? Mm. So then, you know, you take the angle of that arc and take that fraction of, you know, 360 degrees or whatever, and multiply that by, you know, the circumference, and there you go. So it's, you know, like high school math there. But if you have an oval, and so your circle's slightly squished,
right?
People have been looking for a formula for that for thousands of years, and there is no known formula for, you know, arc lengths on an ellipse. Seems like it shouldn't be a difficult problem,
yeah.
But it's unsolved. So kind of knowing the difference between, like, oh, this is something that, like, you should totally look into it. It's really interesting and fun, and it's easy, versus no, you'll spend the next 3 years, like, trying to figure this out.
Well, I mean, I think if I were to summarize a lot of what you've been saying, Scott, is that I think that, like, you've been saying that, like, a lot of this stuff really helps to simplify things. Like, you don't need to, the world does not need to exist in your game. You just need to make sure that the game works the way you would intend it to. So, like, you can take some concessions and some shortcuts just to shrink down what the world actually can do to make it as simple to implement.
Yeah.
And that makes it easier to do. Mm-hmm. And I think that, like, that is a good way to think about it. Because I do feel like when I hear the word contourning, I'm like, oh, I'm not going to learn that. But if you just, like, make it simple and you don't have to worry about rotations, or if you do rotations, make it very simple, then it's just easier to work with.
If that simplicity constrains your design,
yeah,
that's, like, okay.
Yeah.
If there's a little bit of, like, you can be ambitious, and this is the thing I want to build, and it's going to need more than my knowledge can bring to it.
Mm-hmm.
There's choices you can make there. You can say, all right, I'm going to embark on this journey anyway.
Yeah.
So hopefully I could pick it up along the way. And that's when you learn that stuff.
Yeah.
Because you're motivated to do it, because your design is asking you to do it. And other times you could be like, this is all I know. I'm not going to learn more. I'm not motivated to learn more. I'm going to constrain my design to that. And then that's going to be a good design because it's constrained to that, right? Yeah. That's the aim. So it kind of just depends on which direction you want to go. But I mean, your example of the game you're working on now, where you've designed a brand new physics system for it because it doesn't need as much as a full physics system or your previous existing physics systems, is kind of a lesson of that. Like, even when you do have a pretty good background in this, it seems like the lesson you actually really learn from building it, correct me if I'm wrong, is like you just know how much you need for the job now, whereas maybe most people don't at their stage in their careers.
Yeah, I think that's a good, like, if I didn't already know how to write a rigid body physics engine, it would have been probably a terrible idea to make a new one for my game.
Yeah.
But as it is, you know, I knew which parts, I already knew which parts to implement and which parts to skip. And so, like, the whole physics engine for Freudian Expanse, despite being, like, full rigid body, yada, yada, whatever, it's like 300 or 400 lines of code. So there's not really much to it. Mm. It's not the simplest thing, but it's not tens of thousands of lines of code either for this one project. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So,
and it doesn't have a bunch of excess things that you don't need because you know what you need for it, right?
Yeah.
And I mean, you certainly have the ability to expand upon it if the design calls for it.
Right.
So you have some freedom to make that choice, to give it only when it's needed, because you have the ability to do more than that. But yeah, it just sounds like you built it as only for what it needed, and not for anything more than that.
Exactly.
Yeah. Not even with the aim of making it more than that. Like, it's just, yeah, that's what it is.
And I just wanted to try out some new ideas too. Mm-hmm. That, like, I don't know, like, Chipmunk is big enough that, like, when there's enough people using it, I can't just, like, willy-nilly change how certain parts of it work, right? So, like, if I wanted to try out some radical new ideas, you sort of have to start over or make, like, a radical
fascinating
branch.
Like,
that was why I was like, I'm going to make a new physics engine for this.
Right. You are probably, just for your own sanity, are less able to fork that engine than other people are.
Yeah.
Like, you could certainly make a repo and just fork it and then deal with that. But, like, because it's yours, like, you probably are just way less... feel you're able to.
Yeah, because at this point, like, yeah, Chipmunk is for other people.
Yeah.
So, like, that's what it's for, and I can't break that or make their lives harder than it should be.
As someone who knows this topic, what excites you in this field? And then also, after that, I'll ask you, what is not interesting that maybe some people think is? But let's start with, like, what hasn't been done in games that you think could be?
So I think, like, highly deformable stuff is a good example. In the past, no one did it because it was really expensive. And now there's, you know, way more computation we can throw at things. You can throw, you know, multiple cores at, you know, just the physics simulation to get something going. So there's still not necessarily a lot of that, because, like, a lot of the big canned engines don't do that out of the box. That's sort of a... maybe if someone made a new engine for it, Frontier.
Right.
Or like a lot of like fluid simulation stuff where fluids get expensive really, really fast.
Right.
So like that's still like computationally difficult to do. But there's still some interesting stuff to do, like mixed media where you have like fluids interacting with rigid bodies. It's more than just like a surface simulation of things.
Right. Right. And is a lot of that CPU bound, or is there a particular, because I mean, like, parallel processing has exploded the amount of calculations you could do for certain things, but has physics not moved as fast in that area?
Well, I mean, if we're talking about fluids specifically, it's mostly because like fluid representations are a volume thing. So like, if you want to double the resolution of it, it's 8 times as much. You know, if you want to go 4 times, you know, the resolution of it, it's 64 times as much.
So it's just that much more to calculate.
Yeah. It's just the sheer amount of data, because there's more dimensions, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like fluids in 2D are, I don't know, much less computationally expensive.
Yeah,
right.
As far as like multiprocessing with physics stuff, it's just kind of a hard problem.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a lot of stages to it, right? Like, like there's kind of a pipeline of you have to update a bunch of stuff, and then you say, okay, now simulate stuff. And so it has to go and, you know, move stuff around maybe, and then update the collision detection data, and then find all the collision pairs, and then start working on them to apply, or apply collisions between things. And if you want to split up the, you know, some of the, those bits of work, like there's some algorithms you can use to do collision detection in parallel, sort of. And then the actual like solving of the math is a very linear, serial process where you have to do kind of the apply one set of constraints at a time. Like that's the main way that physics engines work nowadays is iterated constraints, basically, where you take one constraint after another and solve it.
Yeah.
So if you want to do those in like on multiple cores, really the only good way to do it is to find separate sets of objects where you've got like these objects over here don't interact with these over here. So you can pull those into two different groups and run those on different CPUs.
But you have to have a lot of confidence in the the solver has to be confident to be able to do that, because you could easily make mistakes.
Well, I mean, that's a sort of just another, like, it's a graph problem, right? Like, okay. you have all the collisions and constraints that connect different objects, and so you have this graph. So you got to find, like, islands in the graph to separate them.
Right, right.
But that's, you know, another step that you have to do that after the collision detection's done and before you can run the solver. So it's still very serial in that you've got, like, even if you can break down each of those pieces into, like, multi-threadable, multi-core stuff, you still have to do all of those steps one after another, which, yeah, kind of prevents the maximum performance. You limits the maximum performance you can get out of it. So,
right.
And it's just very difficult in general to make that work as well as you'd like, you know, and have it scale to unlimited numbers of cores.
Yeah. So it seems like we're in an era where really the innovation in terms of like physics in games is really going to be solved by design thinking and less by like brute force technical prowess.
Well, I mean, there's going to be some, there's big engines, you know, there's money to be made by being the one that can do multi-threading the best, right? But in terms of, you know, like, if, you know, you wanted to make your own physics engine, like making it super extra multi-threaded, it's just not easy. So,
sure.
Yeah, that's kind of the distinction between, like, is it simple enough to do yourself or, you know, do you need to, you know, use an engine to do it for you is maybe the distinction I would make there.
Yeah. All right. Well, I mean, I think we have some things to be excited about.
Yeah.
But what are sort of maybe the common misconceptions or physics that people, like not, presumptions people bring to physics systems that don't actually apply or aren't as important?
Maybe just continuous collision detection is, you know, a thing that trips up a lot of people, I feel like, where most engines by default, you know, an object moves forward in time by, you know, a 60th of a second or, you know, whatever the actual time step is. And if it's moving really, really fast, it can move entirely through a wall or, another character or something like that.
Right.
And so they get really surprised that, well, why did it do that? And it's just because it's like turning on continuous collision detection where you can actually figure out like, oh, where did something between those time steps, where did it collide, is really, really expensive.
Right.
And
it'll solve a problem that has been vexing you, but like it's just too high a price.
Yeah. And so it's a thing where like maybe they'll notice that like, oh, there's a continuous option for, you know, the collision detection on something. And so they'll go and start turning on for everything.
Yeah.
And it gets really, really slow.
Oh, yeah. You
know, everything grinds to a halt just because it's a very difficult problem to solve. And it's sort of like an extra layer on top of all the other collision detection stuff you'd have to do as well. So it kind of just adds a lot of complexity. That was one thing in Chipmunk where everyone kept asking, oh, when are you going to implement continuous collision detection? I just kind of went, I mean, I'm not really going to. You know, part of the reason, you know, like I, you know, some guesstimation on my part, but I mean, part of the reason why Chipmunk was fast compared to other similar engines, I thought was like, because I rejected certain things that were like complicated like that, where it's just like, I'm just not going to do this. That's not going to be my thing. There's Box2D already does that well, but it's very expensive to turn it on. I didn't think I could solve that better than Aaron Kato did.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I just went in a different direction. And so by the fact that it ran several times faster, I could just be like, well, if you're having troubles with that, just, you know, you can run the time step smaller instead.
Right, right. You can run continuous.
Yeah, you can just actually run that several times faster, and if that solves your problem and it's still using less CPU, then great.
Yeah.
If not, then you know, I don't feel bad if someone doesn't want to use my open source project.
Yeah.
So. Yeah.
Well, Scott, this is also an opportunity for you to bring up any physics topics that are exciting, but not particularly related to games that you want to talk about.
Sure. Maybe just mostly that, like we think of the world around us as being like these like discrete things, but like everything is waves. I don't know if you know this, but everything is waves.
Hold on. Let me recline my chair a little bit. All right. Take me there.
I mean, like in particular, rendering, we talk about ray tracing and all this sort of stuff, but like light isn't rays, it's waves.
Yeah. Right. And
there's all sorts of like weird ways where that breaks down with like diffraction, even in like fairly weird setting, iridescence, like thin films of stuff get weird iridescent effects on them, and that like ray tracing would help you with that. It's because it's a wave, and there's all sorts of just weird things that happen. Yeah. Just in very not everyday circumstances, maybe. But yeah, that's actually how it works, is it's all waves.
Yeah.
Or like, all of the particles that make up everything, they're also sort of like waves, sort of.
Uh-huh.
They always draw them as like little dots, like ping pong balls move around, but they're definitely not that. They're at best fuzzy things made of waves.
So forget everything you heard in this last hour.
Yeah. There's no such thing as a rigid body. It's all waves. It's all waves.
Waves, 2D.
Well, I mean, Chipmunk is a mature physics engine. Have you thought about something like Chipmunk 3D? Or have you thought about, what the next step is? Or is it really just like, that's a project, I'm working on other things now. What's the future for Scott?
On Mastodon, Aaron Kato posts there a lot, and like we've interacted a bunch actually, and he is making Box 2D version 3, which a bunch of the things that I wanted to try out in Viridian Expanse, where I was like, I'm just gonna make my own physics engine and try some bunch of these ideas. He's actually doing a lot of those for Box 2D 3, and he changed it from a C++ API to a C API for all the reasons that like I actually liked doing a C API. And so he's kind of like his checklist of all the things that like is improved for Box 2D 3 is all the things that I would ever want to do with Chipmunk. And it's sort of just like, well, that does what I would want to do. Maybe I should just think of something completely different.
Yeah.
I don't know, like a conversation I had like a week or two ago was actually about like immediate mode physics stuff, which I know it might be an interesting idea to try out. It's like a very experimental thing.
Yeah.
Where instead of having, making objects and then having them in a scene and deleting them later, it's just you keep updating them. And as long as you keep updating them, they exist. And once you stop updating them, they go away.
Yes.
Just as a different way to interact with the physics and, modify constraints and joints on things and drive things with motors might be interesting. So that's something I've kind of thought about is maybe I'll try that someday.
Yeah. That's a really exciting attitude. It's like this person is kind of going to do a lot of things I was thinking of. So your reaction to that is, I'm going to think of some other stuff.
Yeah.
Like, I like that. It's a good attitude.
Yeah.
That's cool. Well, if you learn nothing else from this episode, and you surely have learned a lot, that's a good thing to take away as well.
Yeah.
That's our show. You can find Scott online at his website at slimkey.net and on Mastodon. We'll put the links in the show notes. For those show notes and additional links from today's conversation, go to our website, nicegames.club. Visit us on social media at Nice Games Club, where Dale posts about game dev resources and JavaScript array methods. Is it waves? We'll find out. Reply in the various platforms or email us, contact@nicegames.club. Nice Games Club is on Patreon. Support the show and get stuff, including ad-free episodes. Sign up at patreon.com/nicegamesclub. And if you want to keep things more casual, just stop by nicegames.club/discord and tell Steven he's wrong. Next week, we'll be looking at targeting multiple platforms and custom spirits in Spirit Island.
We let Steven have that one.
Thank you.
And I haven't heard it yet. But I'm promising listeners it'll be worth it.
Yeah, I hope so.
That's it for this week.
So until we start again, remember to
play nice
and make nice.
Thanks, Alan.
Steven with the choral part in three.
I don't know enough about Halo, I'm not gonna lie.
Yeah.
I do know the theme.
Oh, in terms of physics?
Yeah.
Boy. That's a hard question. Might have to edit this part out as I sit here and think for a little bit.
Right, right.
No worries.
Yeah, I'm asking you what the frontier is. You're like, no, I think I've pretty much conquered it all.
Always keep trying new things.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And everything is waves. Awesome. But not physics engines.
Right, no. I mean, eventually.
Soon.
We'll get there.
Well, no, I mean, like, you know, deep down.
Yeah.
Okay, fair. Good point, actually. Yeah, no, you're right. Good thing we can just delete that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I think I'm editing this one. I'm keeping track of all the asides we do not need.
It's a total disaster. I'm editing. I'm sorry, Mark.
At your job, do you ever have to deal with a nose roller? How about a snub pulley? Well, if you're installing a new conveyor belt system, dealing with the different components can sound like you're speaking a foreign language. Luckily, you've got a team ready to help. Grainger's technical product specialists are fluent in maintenance, repair, and operations. So whenever you want to talk shop, just reach out. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.